There were figures moving inside the shadowed entrance. Not a sound came from the waiting crowd as the visitors slowly emerged and stood blinking in the fierce light of an unfamiliar sun. There were seven of them, all men, and they did not look in the least like the super beings she had expected. It was true they were all somewhat above the average in height and had thin, clear-cut features, but they were so pale that their skins were almost white. They seemed, moreover, worried and uncertain, which was something that puzzled Laura very much. For the first time it occurred to her that this landing on Thalassa might be unintentional, and that the visitors were as surprised to be here as the islanders were to greet them. The mayor of Palm Bay, confronted with the supreme moment of his career, stepped forward to deliver the speech on which he had been frantically working ever since the car left the village. A second before he opened his mouth, a sudden doubt struck him and sponged his memory clean. Everyone had automatically assumed that the ship came from Earth. But that was pure guesswork. It might just as easily have been sent here from one of the other colonies, of which there were at least a dozen much closer than the parent world. In his panic over protocol, all that Laura's father could manage was, "We welcome you to Thalassa. You're from Earth, I presume." That, "I presume," was to make Mayor Fordyce immortal. It would be a century before anyone discovered that the phrase was not quite original. In all that waiting crowd, Laura was the only one who never heard the confirming answer, spoken in English that seemed to have speeded up a trifle during the centuries of separation. For in that moment, she saw Leon for the first time. He came out of the ship, moving as unobtrusively as possible to join his companions at the foot of the ramp. Perhaps he had remained behind to make some adjustment to the controls, perhaps. And this seemed more likely. He had been reporting the progress of the meeting to the Great Mother ship, which must be hanging up there in space, far beyond the uttermost fringes of the atmosphere. Whatever the reason, from then onward, Laura had eyes for no one else. Even in that first instant, she knew that her life could never again be the same. This was something new and beyond all her experience, filling her at the same moment with wonder and fear. Her fear was for the love she felt for Clyde, her wonder for the new and unknown thing that had come into her life. Leon was not as tall as his companions, but was much more stockily built, giving an impression of power and competence. His eyes, very dark and full of animation, were deep-set in rough-hewn features which no one could have called handsome, yet which Laura found disturbingly attractive. Here was a man who had looked upon sights she could not imagine. A man who, perhaps, had walked the streets of Earth and seen its fabled cities. What was he doing here on lonely Thalassa? And why were those lines of strain and worry about his ceaselessly searching eyes? He had looked at her once already, but his gaze had swept on without faltering. Now it came back, as if prompted by memory, and for the first time he became conscious of Laura, as all along she had been aware of him. Their eyes locked, bridging gulfs of time and space and experience. The anxious furrows faded from Leon's brow, the tense lines slowly relaxed, and presently he smiled. It was dusk when the speeches, the banquets, the receptions, the interviews were over. Leon was very tired, but his mind was far too active to allow him to sleep. After the strain of the last few weeks, when he had awakened to the shrill clamor of alarms and fought with his colleagues to save the wounded ship, it was hard to realize that they had reached safety at last. What incredible good fortune that this inhabited planet had been so close. Even if they could not repair the ship and complete the 2 centuries of flight that still lay before them, here at least they could remain among friends. No shipwrecked mariners of sea or space could hope for more than that. The night was cool and calm and ablaze with unfamiliar stars. Yet there were still some old friends, even though the ancient patterns of the constellations were hopelessly lost. There was mighty Rigel, no fainter for all the added light years that its rays must now cross before they reached his eyes. And that must be giant Canopus, almost in line with their destination, but so much more remote that even when they reached their new home, it would seem no brighter than in the skies of Earth. Leon shook his head, as if to clear the stupefying, hypnotic image of immensity from his mind. "Forget the stars," he told himself. "You will face them again soon enough. cling to this little world while you are upon it, even though it may be a grain of dust on the road between the earth you will never see again and the goal that waits for you at journey's end 200 years from now. His friends were already sleeping, tired and content, as they had a right to be. Soon he would join them, when his restless spirit would allow him to. But first he would see something of this world to which chance had brought him, this oasis peopled by his own kinsmen in the deserts of space. He left the long, single-storied guest house that had been prepared for them in such obvious haste, and walked out into the single street of Palm Bay. There was no one about, though sleepy music came from a few houses. It seemed that the villagers believed in going to bed early, or perhaps they, too, were exhausted by the excitement and hospitality of the day. That suited Leon, who wanted only to be left alone until his racing thoughts had slowed to rest. Out of the quiet night around him, he became aware of the murmuring sea, and the sound drew his footsteps away from the empty street. It was dark among the palms when the lights of the village had faded behind him. But the smaller of Thalassa's two moons was high in the south, and its curious yellow glow gave him all the guidance he required. Presently he was through the narrow belt of trees, and there at the end of the steeply shelving beach lay the ocean that covered almost all of this world. A line of fishing boats was drawn up at the water's edge, and Leon walked slowly toward them, curious to see how the craftsmen of Thalassa had solved one of man's oldest problems. He looked approvingly at the trim plastic hulls, the narrow outrigger float, the power-operated winch for raising the nets, the compact little motor, the radio with its direction-finding loop. This almost primitive yet completely adequate simplicity had a profound appeal to him. It was hard to think of a greater contrast with the labyrinthine complexities of the mighty ship hanging up there above his head. For a moment he amused himself with fantasy. How pleasant to jettison all his years of training and study, and to exchange the life of a starship propulsion engineer for the peaceful, undemanding existence of a fisherman. They must need someone to keep their boats in order, and perhaps he could think of a few improvements. He shrugged away the rosy dream, without bothering to marshal all its obvious fallacies, and began to walk along the shifting line of foam where the waves had spent their last strength against the land. Underfoot was the debris of this young ocean's newborn life, empty shells and carapaces that might have littered the coasts of Earth 1 billion years ago. Here, for instance, was a tightly wound spiral of limestone, which he had surely seen before in some museum. It might well be. Any design that had once served her purpose, nature repeated endlessly on world after world.